first golf major of the year. And we're on to another high-paying event at the RBC Heritage. We'll talk about that here. Aussie Rules Football, of course, a little UFL. Touch on some of those games. We're starting to get a little bit of an idea of how things are going to go there. Big weekend for racing. We got the F1 and IndyCar guys back in action this weekend. And then we got NASCAR at Talladega. So very, very exciting race card for us this week. Sam will join us in the back half of the program to go through all of that, as well as his thoughts on the now slumping Pirates, who were just swept by the Mets here right before I came on here. Pirates lost to the Mets. So last night's game, very peculiar. They pulled Jared Jones 59 pitches, which is very odd. But this is the Pirates, and you hate to say people don't like it when people are always saying they're right, but I mean, I think we kind of knew this was going to happen. So at least those of us who think clearly. So as much as you would like to see the Pirates do well, they're just not a real serious franchise about winning. They're just not. They're simply not. If they were, they wouldn't have Kutch hitting in the four hole several games this year already. And they wouldn't be doing things like that with a 1-0 lead, taking a pitcher out who's cruising with 59 pitches. So 75-100, of course, used to be the benchmark, but we don't go by that anymore. So, they keep babying all these guys, but yet the arm injuries continue to go up. So explain that to me. It has nothing to do with the pitch clock, because the guys in the old days actually worked at a pretty fast clip. So we'll talk more about that as we get into the show. But let's start it off with what we did last week. Last week, it wasn't a great week. It wasn't a terrible week. We were up a little over 5 units as a whole with the entire inclusive group of our golf bets, I guess, so to speak. So all the golf bets, I gave up a lot of matchups there, which are basically like games themselves, and then some futures and stuff. And we didn't do very good, but Cam Smith was beating around the bush there. He was one of our top plays, so if he would have cashed, it would have been a nice one. But nobody had anything for Scottie Scheffler, so, you know, as we expected. But we'll talk about golf here a little bit more here in the end of segment one. But up about 5.5 units, all inclusive. 6-8 in AFL. We did have ROI positive with Adelaide Crows. We were a big underdog and won outright. So that was a nice money line winner there. We were up about over 3.5 units in NASCAR. In play was good to me in NASCAR. Obviously, nobody could capitalize on that, but we'll talk with Sam about that. I was liking Chase Elliott the way he was looking early in the race, and then Sam said he loved the way he looked too, so I bet on him. He came through. Our top play, though, Sam and I's both top play last week. Brad Keselowski ran second, so that's a good sign for him as he continues to put together a pretty good season, some strong finishes for him, and I think Brad will get into victory lane just like Chase did, so it's been a while. But Brad in the top six. Well, we actually had several top sixes. We had Daniel Suarez was up there. Chase Briscoe's run well now, two straight weeks. So keep an eye on him. And then Masters matchups, we were 5-2. So if you just play the matchups, you're 5-2. We'll take that ROI anytime we can. Our top 20s, 30s, and 40s, we were 4-7. So those weren't great. But we took a couple long shots on there. Some guys, even from top 40s, if you throw $10 on them, it would have paid out, close to 100. So take a stab there. We're not giving out favorites. Obviously, we talked about Scottie Scheffler, how good he would be. So, you knew he was going to be formidable. You knew he was the guy to beat. But I can't bet him at less than $4. It's just ridiculous. And now he's installed as the favorite in the PGA. So, in a few weeks. So, I don't know. I guess I understand that he's got to be the favorite. There's no question about that. But 4-1, again, just the shortest price since Tiger. So anyway, recapping how we did, we were up about 5.5 units on the week. Let's jump over to NHL. Penguins are out of the playoffs after an interesting night of hockey last night, where the Detroit Red Wings got the job done, but it didn't matter because the Caps beat the Flyers 2-0 and clinched the final spot in the Eastern Conference. So we have the Eastern Conference matchup set. We're now just waiting for a couple of seeding issues in the West, but the teams have already been decided as we go into the last two nights of the season. So I will have a comprehensive rundown of all the playoff series that I like, and there's going to be some that I definitely do like. So I'm curious to see the pricing on a few of these, so that's going to factor into it. But early on in the Eastern Conference, here's what we know right now. It'll be Florida and Tampa squaring off in the first round of the playoffs, a battle of Florida. Now, these teams know each other obviously very well. They're both very good. They're both recently removed from deep cup runs, both of them. Florida has been the better team the most of the season, but in the last month and a half of the season, I will tell you that Tampa has, I've watched a lot of their games, Tampa has been the better team here. So they're plus 145 on the series price, Florida plus or minus 170. I think that's probably about right. Maybe even tick Florida down a touch. They have not played well in the last several weeks of the season. Their goaltending hasn't been as sharp. Their scoring has been down. I don't know. It's been an odd situation. And now they did clinch the division last night, so which ended up making them be able to host Tampa instead of playing Toronto in the first round. So I don't really know if that is a benefit or not, because to me, Toronto is a playoff pushover. They're not a team that you're ever going to be afraid of. They have no grit. So Florida, to me, would beat them in a series in a minimum of six games. It might even be less than that, or a maximum of six games. Lightning match up a little bit better. They have grit. They have toughness. They have proven winners, and they have a shutdown defenseman in Victor Hedman. So, and they have an outstanding goaltender. So I think that I'm going to give Tampa a shot here. I'm going to check out the game handicaps. Those things just coming up here this afternoon. So I'm going to take a little bit of a better look, see if I can find a couple of, you know, maybe some one-off prices across the market. So I'm going to shop around for these, because you're going to find different varying prices at different books here based on liability going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. So if you have teams that are needing certain teams to, you know, offset their book liability for the Stanley Cup, they'll have things priced maybe a fraction of a difference, but it makes enough difference to a player like us. We're watching our wallet. We're trying to control our bankroll, and that's the number one object here. Is you got to be responsible when you're doing this, not just from how much you spend, but just in where you're betting and how you're getting priced. You don't want to get priced out of things. You don't want to get scalped on with bad juice. So hunt around at the various books. You got them all over West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. So you can go into any of those states and find whatever you need to get the job done in these parts, which is a nice luxury. And the people in Nevada do not have that luxury. So please remember that next time someone tells you that, oh, they do, they have this in Vegas. They got everything in Vegas. They do not. That's an absolute fallacy. That's just not true. Anyway, back to these series. It's Florida in Tampa. Very good series there. I'd take Tampa on the handicap probably plus a game and a half. I think that may go seven, so should be a good one. Rangers minus 450. They will take on the Capitals, who got in the final spot in the Eastern Conference last night. Hats off to them. I know a lot of people were down on them. I was not. I gave them a fighting shot here. I thought they did a great job at the end of last year rebuilding their roster, getting a little bit younger, but still not getting rid of their core guys. They did exactly what the Penguins should have done, and the Penguins did not do, and they changed coaches. And the Caps found something now that's working. Ovi's got a jolt of adrenaline with these young dudes being in the lineup. They've gotten good goaltending. So hats off to the Capitals. Nothing but credit to them. They're going to have a hard time against the Rangers, who are not playing very well. There's no question about that. And I'm going to be curious to see if the Capitals goaltending can hold up in this series early on, and the Capitals defense, which has been spectacular. Back-to-back nights, they need to win these games. They shut out Boston. They shut out the Flyers. Just exceptional job. They're playing playoff games right now. I think that's an advantage for them. I would not be shocked if the Caps steal a game or two in this series. I don't know if they're going to have enough, though, to be able to win it. I would like to pick them, but I just think they may come up a little bit short. But do not be surprised if this doesn't go six games. So maybe an over 5.5 or over 4.5 games, because they're not going to sweep them. But the Washington Capitals are playing playoff-style hockey right now, and they're proving they can do it, which is a great sign. And you have Ovechkin. So, and the Rangers play bad under pressure. They're just not. They're a team that the crowd turns on them. The goaltending's been shaky for as talented as Shesterkin is. He's got some issues sometimes with mental game. And then the Rangers take dumb penalties, and then that's another problem for them. Now, they are very good on shorthanded. They can score shorthanded. But their style that Peter Laviolette plays in the playoffs, to me, just probably isn't going to win. It'll probably win this series, but I don't see it winning long term. So I was hoping to actually go against the Rangers here, but I can't quite get there. But we'll take the Caps on the handicap. I think this goes to at least six games, and Washington hangs around. Boston and Toronto, obviously a big rivalry series here. Boston pretty much owns Toronto, which pretty much everybody owns Toronto. The two biggest misconceptions in sports, in sports betting, and just sports in general, are that Toronto is a hockey power, and they're good, and that Rory McIlroy is a good golfer. Those couldn't be further from the truth. Now, while Toronto is a little bit closer than Rory McIlroy is to achieving greatness, they're just not good enough. Their goaltending's not good enough. Their back line's not good enough. Their bottom six is not good enough. Austin Matthews is awesome. Their top two scoring lines are very good, but they are so careless, and the games get it's high tempo, and they turn the puck over, and they give up odd man rushes, and they give up goals as fast as they score them, and that's just not going to work in the playoffs. Teams will be responsible. Teams will frustrate them. Teams will sit back, stop them, lock them down, trap, and then counterattack, in knowing that they're bad on defense, and they'll beat them. And Boston, while it concerns me, and I again, that Boston was a team that I would have liked to have faded as well. If they were playing Tampa, maybe in this round, I may have went with Tampa. I think Tampa's better than them down the middle. Boston definitely lacks depth down the center. That's been an issue. Goaltending platoon worries me as well. So this series, I think, goes at least six games too. I think these are going to be some long series, although the last one that I'll get to, probably not. So I'm going to go the over in here, but I don't trust either one of those teams. Lean slightly to Boston just because they have a few more proven commodities and guys who have won before. So lean Boston, but I like the over in that series as well. I think all these go to at least six games. Carolina and New York, the Islanders, I'm not sure the Islanders are going to have enough wherewithal to be able to hold on to to games late against Carolina. The Islanders played incredibly good hockey down the stretch. Give Patrick Waugh full credit. Got the team turned around, although they went through some dips. He got them back up, and they're playing really well right now. Plus 280 right now on the money line, and Carolina minus 340 there. Boston was 125, and Toronto plus 105, by the way. Carolina minus 340. Islanders plus 280. I don't love Carolina either, but I think they'll win this series handily. I think probably five games, perhaps six, depending on what kind of goaltending the Islanders can get. So that would be the one in the East that I may play under the series game total, and I probably wouldn't lay the handicap because I think the Canes will probably win that at the very worst 4-2. All right, and then the one Western Conference one that is set right now, Colorado and Winnipeg. Colorado really struggling right now in net. They're minus 135, Winnipeg plus 115. I think Winnipeg makes a little bit of sense here. They definitely have the advantage in the goaltending. So we'll take a little peek at them, but I'm not certain I love them either. Potential matchups in the Western Conference. So as I mentioned, you got Winnipeg and Colorado. Dallas is going to be the number one seed in the West. They're either going to play Dallas or they're either going to play Los Angeles or Nashville. That depends on a game that the Kings still have pending, as the Kings take on, I believe, the Blackhawks. Yes, the Blackhawks. So probably a win for the Kings. So they probably will tie in 99 with Nashville, which I believe will give the Kings the seventh spot, but I could be wrong about that. And then that would match up Edmonton and Vegas. Actually, the chase is more for Vegas, because Vegas has 98 points. LA has 97 in the Pacific. So they could actually catch either one of these teams depending on how the tiebreakers go. OT loss, but both have major favorable games here. Golden Knights play the Ducks, and as we said, the Kings play the Blackhawks. The Predators are finished. The Predators are the team that I would watch out for. They got a good goalie, and they have some really good top-end players. So they've played very good down the stretch. Their team, I would say, is a danger team to a team like Vancouver. If they match with Vancouver, who I'm a fan of, I want Vancouver to do well. I think Rick Talkett's an awesome coach, but Vancouver lacks a little toughness, so I'd be a little bit concerned about that. So I'm probably going to take a shot. If Nashville ends up playing Vancouver, I think it's a great matchup for them. I think they can win that series for sure as a nice dog. The Kings possibly matching up with the Stars. I think that will be a trickier series than people give credit. Kings still very good down the center. Dallas right now, probably most people's favorite to win it. They're playing the most stable of all the top clubs. But I just don't know about Dallas. I don't know about their scoring depth. That worries me a tad. And they sometimes can struggle to score goals. So I might lean Kings there in a long series that they could get the job done. Edmonton in Vegas, that's going to be a hell of a showdown. Vegas turning it on a touch the last week, but they've really not played well. But they gave Edmonton trouble, and if they get the goaltending, that should be a great series. And then obviously we talked about Winnipeg and Colorado. So some good ones on the horizon there in the Western Conference, I think. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I like Nashville to make a little bit of a run here into the into the deep into the Western Conference playoffs. And then I think whoever wins the Tampa-Florida series, if Florida's able to beat Tampa, then I think that they're kind of back to being able to play. They're playing good hockey again. So I think the winner of that series goes pretty far in the Eastern Conference. I was kind of hoping that Detroit would get in because I had been on them early in the season. And I'd still like what I'm seeing out of them. But Islanders and Caps take those last two spots. So NHL playoffs should be great. Looking forward to that quite a bit. And we will see how things go. Check us out, BLS_PRP, for all my final series picks that I'll have up before the weekend, which I believe the NHL playoffs start Saturday. Maybe Friday, but either way, right, you'll be able to hear this and get over to Twitter and check it out. Basketball, let's go over there real quick. Caitlin Clark, number one pick in the WNBA draft. Fascinating as always. She dominates the media right now. Primetime on ESPN, just things you wouldn't have even thought of. I remember trying to find the WNBA draft on TV or on the internet to try to find out where players went, and it was so hard. And then they started doing it like a Monday afternoon, and it was like, this, no one even knows about this thing. So most watched WNBA draft ever, and that's probably mostly because of Caitlin Clark. And you got to know a lot of these other girls because of her, because they're playing against her. So it's pretty cool for women's basketball. The Indiana Fever have got a really good thing going, and hopefully the WNBA doesn't screw this up. You have Cardoza and Angel Reese getting drafted both by the Chicago Sky, which is fascinating. They're about ready to throw down with each other, and now they're on the same team. So cool stuff. I think it's awesome. So Nika Mule goes to Seattle. So it was very exciting. WNBA draft season starts here in a little while, which is cool. It goes right into the season, and we'll keep some tabs on that. I'm sure there'll be some good betting opportunities as we progress there. NBA playoffs begin this weekend. We had the play-in games last night. The Lakers took down the Pelicans in a tight game. Didn't play very well because they're not very good. And then the Kings, surprisingly, take care of the Warriors pretty handily there. So now you got the Sixers and the Heat tonight, which it will be old news by the time you hear this. Hawks and Bulls, just can't even believe those teams even made it. And then you have the Pelicans and Kings on Friday night, which is tonight if you're listening on Friday. That's the play-in tournament. Kings minus 1.5, 214. Looks like the Pelicans got some injuries there, so maybe the Kings. But this stuff is really, really tough to watch unless you're watching Wembanyama, and he's not in the playoffs. So going to keep the NBA things to a minimum. Sam may have some thoughts on those, and if we have any series plays or anything that I like, I will pass it on and put it on the BLS_PRP on Twitter or X. And then finally, golf betting here. As we talked about, Rory McIlroy, just a no-show again. I mean, this guy is just not good. He's not going to win a major. He's not really probably ever going to contend for a major. So I just don't know why people bet him. I don't understand why odds makers make him. If it was up to me, I would be making Rory McIlroy 30-40-1 for these tournaments. He's 10. It's just wrong. It's flat out wrong. So don't bet him. Do yourself a favor. If you really like him and you really want to bet him and you think that he may win, at least give it a round or two. Like, let him shoot 5 over on Thursday and then you can bet him, because then it'll be 80-1. And then maybe you'll have a shot, but as getting a return. But even if he wins, 10-1 for what he's going to need to do to win is insane to me. I just don't trust the guy. I just don't think he's very good. And I don't think he'll ever win a big one again. So we're on to the RBC Heritage. Scotty Scheffler, of course, dominated the Masters. We had Cam Smith in contention. Some of our other guys played pretty well until the weekend, and then they faltered quite a bit. Top plays for me this week, I like Tommy Fleetwood, and I like Cameron Davis. Those are two guys I think that will be pretty solid here this week. Brian Harman, Chris Kirk, Corey Connors, guys that we played last week who are in this event, I think maybe would be worth a look there. Harman 48-1, Kirk 55-1, Connors 46-1. Back to the top two guys, Cam Davis, he is about 60-1, Tommy Fleetwood around 20-1. Davis tied for 12th last week at the Masters, played pretty well. He was 7th here last year. Fleetwood tied for 3rd at the Masters last week and was 15th here last year. So both those guys playing pretty well. Had some guys tipping JT Poston. He's had a pretty good year, but his form dipped a little bit. You want to take a shot with him, 56-1. And then some of your longer guys, Taylor Moore, who I had last week at the Masters, played him in a couple of sheets that I was on. He played really well. So I like his game right now. He's around 70, 75 to 1. I think he's definitely got a look here, making the top 20 and maybe even a top 10. So I think that's worthwhile to take a peek at him. Matt Fitzpatrick, I'm not going to announce him as an official play. I don't love him here. He has won here. So that I think he won here last year. So the repeating's tough. So I'm not going to do anything with him in the outright market. He's down around 22 to 1 or so. But he could be a contender, maybe a top 10 bet. Keegan Bradley, 80 to 1. Heard Jeff Seeley tip him too. So that's probably a good one. And then Eric Barnes, also tipped by Jeff Seeley, who's one of the best golf guys out there. I liked him too. I think he's worth a shot at 420 to 1 for a top 20. Like, that's not what his price is for the top 20, but at 420 to win the tournament, play him in a, for a top 20, you can still get a really good return on him. So anyway, recapping Cam Davis, Tommy Fleetwood, my top plays. Matt Fitzpatrick would be a top play if his price was a tad bit better, plus winning back-to-back years at these things is not easy, so I have him off. Secondary guys, Harmon, Kirk, Connors, and Poston, and then their long shots, Barnes, Taylor Moore, and Keegan Bradley at the RBC Heritage. That is in Harbortown, around Hilton Head, South Carolina. So golf in full swing, of course, and a few weeks away from the PGA. A couple bad beats to go over. Canadians money line, talked about it briefly. Last two nights, they had a 4-1 lead in the third period on Monday night. They had a 3-1 lead in late in the second period last night. And they end up having a late lead in both games. Both times, the Red Wings score with less than a minute to go last night was with 5 seconds left, maybe even 3 seconds, 3.7 when it actually went in net, something like that. And the Canadians did something so stupid. Their guys, they had the game won. They literally had the game won. All their guy needs to do is flip the puck to center ice. They possess the puck. The left defenseman goes to the right D-man. He, under no duress, goes right in front of the goal, which you know, normally you're not supposed to do that. Pass two, tape to tape, boom. And instead of flipping the puck out to center ice, he flips it to the neutral zone towards the benches or the other side, and it bangs in the corner off the top of the blue line or in between the red line and the blue line. It's sitting there, and there's no chance that the Red Wings are going to enter the zone and have a chance of scoring. It's a 0%, 0%. There's like 10 seconds left. Well, guess what? He gets cute, and he tries to score an empty net goal, and he misses badly, and with 7.1 seconds left, they win the faceoff, boom, boom, over, or tied, and then they win in overtime. And the night before, the goalie got so deep in his net, a guy walked out on the goal line, and that Raymond kid who's pretty good for Detroit. I like Detroit. I think they're going to be a good team. But deep in the net, gives up a late goal. They lose in overtime. So two nights in a row. I think the Canadians, and I could be wrong about this, but I think the last four or five times they've played Detroit, they've led the game, they've given up the lead late, and they've lost in overtime. I want to say that it's like five games in a row that they've lost in overtime to Detroit. So just horrible there. If you had Denny Hamlin in the race, that was a tough one. He looked like he was going to pull away and win that thing. Caution's late. Tires deteriorating. Hamlin spins out trying to juggle for position late with Chase Elliott, who fortunately I was on, and it was a cruel one if you had Denny Hamlin, but you won one a couple weeks ago that you probably shouldn't have, so you can't be too pissed about that. And then these Major League Baseball unders, if you're getting these games that are going to extra innings, you get 2-2 or you get even some 1-1s and you're getting them into the 10th, and then all hell breaks loose. The visiting team is first up, get the guy on second. That leads to a 2-3-4 run inning. Then the home team comes up, ties it up. I mean, this is just, it's murderous. But one thing that I have noticed, and I think you can get great prices on this, these visiting teams, the team is batting first in this advantage, they have the advantage because they're able then to go ahead in the game. And if they haven't used their closer, they can use them. And they're just, it's a different type of game when you're managing up a run or two in a lot of cases than you are in a tie game. So incredible amount. I talked about it last year with Coach on the radio show, again, WKKX, every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. Don't miss that. Pine Room on the Watchdog. But we talked about the advantage that these road teams have in this situation. And I really meant to do that. And I got to do it sometimes, go through and actually pull the numbers, because it seems so obvious to me that the road team is able to score the runs first, put the pressure on the home team, and then hold on. You saw it last night. Cleveland came back and beat Boston, the same situation. And then there was another game yesterday that ended up being 10-7 somebody won, or it was a ridiculous score. So I think look for these advantages. If you are watching a game and it goes to extra innings, take a peek with the visiting team. And I would suggest even looking at run lines. You can find in-game run lines -1.5 for the road team. Immediately when it goes to extra innings, they may say, well, the home team's got the last at bat. Like, but it doesn't matter. Like, if you're going to spot the other team runs, it changes everything. It's not going into the inning tied up. You are going tied up, but there's a man on scoring position before you even get the hit. So I don't think there's any advantage for the home team there. I'd say the advantage lies with the road team, and take some chances, exploit it. You could probably find some $2, $3, $4 even sometimes with the visiting team who's batting first to -1.5. I mean, I've seen teams win by 3, 4, 5, 6. I even seen somebody won this year by like 6 or 7 runs in extra innings, a visiting team. So obviously, a home team's never going to do that. So you're not going to the home team. The only way they do it, Orioles did it today, walk off home run, Cedric Mullins, but you're not going to be able to cover run lines. But there's another advantage. You can't really cover run lines as the home team in that situation unless you're walking off with a homer. But the road team can. The road team can plate 5 right there, and the game isn't going to stop. So just be aware of that. Be looking for it. Live betting is where it's at if you want to try to make money in the long run, and you're not just doing this for somewhat fun, somewhat pleasure. But if you're trying to really, really win, live in-play betting is the way to go. All right, we'll take a quick break here on Bettor's Last Stand, show number 83. We're going to come back. We're going to hit on a little bit more baseball. Also, some Aussie rules, a little UFL, and then give you a little Kentucky Derby peek here, just a couple of weeks away here from the Kentucky Derby. So we look forward to that, and we will be back in a moment here on Bettor's Last Stand.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Bettor's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. Bettor's Last Stand, show 83 from the Pine Room Studios, downtown Wheeling. Kentucky Derby coming up in a couple of weeks, but we also got the Beer Mile Waterfront Fest over at Waterfront Hall. We'll be co-hosting the event. Get on waterfronthall.com and sign up today. Get your team entered for the Beer Mile. Lots of exciting stuff. Kentucky Derby watch party. We've got bands, DJs, vendors, food, all kinds of stuff down there. So going to be cool. And we appreciate all the support of those who are making that happen for us here in the Pine Room. All right. So Kentucky Derby getting close. We're going to touch on that here momentarily. But a few industry news and notes. Things. North Carolina, $659.3 million wagered in March. In its first month with active mobile wagering. So that they had brick and mortar in some spots, and they did their best handle ever with $659 million. Obviously, March Madness, a big part of that. And then breaking news today, I had it written down, and then it's actually expanded upon since I wrote this up yesterday. Raptors' Jontay Porter, who made over 1,000 bets totaling millions of dollars from 2021 to 2023 as a FanDuel VIP account holder. That's him personally. They say no pro basketball for him. But then we found out today that he is now doing life in prison. He will not ever be allowed in the NBA. He is banned for life. So he got a life sentence. He is done. He will never play basketball again in the NBA or probably the G League. I'm sure he's not allowed to play in that either. So he is done. It turns out he was giving someone money to make these bets, $800,000 to win over a million, or $80,000 to win over a million something in one of them for his unders. This is really bad. But you know what? The bookmakers caught him. The regulators caught him. And this is what's great about it is people say, oh, see, this never happened. It happened. Trust me. This was happening for years. You just didn't know it because there's nobody there to regulate it. So you got illegal bookmakers. What are they going to do? And they're going to go break somebody's legs or kneecap them or shoot them or whatever. But they're not going to call the authorities. So you're not going to have any situations like that. When we see something odd, we call the authorities, or we have a chain reaction. You talk to your compliance people, you report the federal reporting, standards that you have to meet, and then the authorities are notified, and then it goes from there, and it's out of your hands, off property. And I've been involved in some of those myself, and it's there for a reason. We're there to be sure that there's integrity on both sides. It's not about winning and losing. It's about how you're winning or how you're losing. It's you can't cheat. Like, you can't cheat. It's not right to cheat. And when you get people taking shots like this and doing silly things, they're going to get banned. But it is quite interesting that Porter was banned for life. Like Pete Rose, he's a nobody. Porter was a nobody. He played a couple minutes a game for the Raptors. He's a nobody. And now Ohtani, we just brush this under the rug. Porter had a couple $1 million in bets, and the guys that bet for him, it was only a few $100,000, I think, on the ones that he actually fixed the games or fixed the prop bets. But $16.5 million, and we're expected to just say, oh, okay, nothing to see here. Ohtani's, he's clear. He's in the clear just because he said so. I mean, listen, I'm not saying that the guy's guilty, but man, how can he be so quick to just dismiss that? That's very odd to me. Something stinks here. And I don't know. There's more to this story. I don't know if we'll ever get it. And shame on baseball for not being transparent. They banned one of the best players ever and will not let him in the Hall of Fame, will not let him around baseball for betting. And now you're just supposed to just say, oh, yeah, it's $16.5 million. Yeah, that's nothing. That is a lot of money. And Ipe, maybe he did steal it. I don't think he did. I think he was the fall man for all this. And I think in Japan right now, his family's being rewarded handsomely. And we'll never know. But something's not right with this. Something is not adding up here. You can only plead ignorance so much. And Ohtani has done nothing to answer these questions. And his story's changed numerous times. And I just don't understand why there was any need to lie or change your story if you were innocent. So, but this shows you. If this Porter guy is LeBron, nothing happens to him. If he's Ohtani, obviously nothing happens to him. But he's Porter, and he's a nobody. If this was some dude on the Pirates, he would be out of baseball already. There's no question. They would have said that the accounts, the money, the funds were in his name. That makes him an accessory at the very least. He's out of the game. But they're not going to do that. And it's downright wrong, and it makes you question leadership in these sporting leagues, as well as we already know the government. So just be careful. Don't believe everything you see, and do your homework and trust your mind. Like, use your own mind. It's okay. Sometimes you're going to be wrong, but you only need to be right once. All right. The Hawks were the NBA worst, 29-53 this year. So keep that in mind if they're able to win the play-in game. Worst of any team since 1990. Hard to imagine. NFL draft coming up next week. Caleb Williams, the overwhelming favorite, about 100-1 to be the number one pick. Jaden Daniels looks to go number two. He's -150 to go number two. Drake May, even money to go number three. Marvin Harrison Jr., -200 to go fourth. And Malik Nabers, +200 to go fifth. I think Malik Nabers is pretty intriguing. I'll have a few bets for people next week with some of the some teams that I think may be looking for defensive backs. I feel like the Lions and the Packers both probably will, so maybe bets on those. And I do think Malik Nabers is going to go very high, and I think there probably will be five quarterbacks in the first round. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I like J.J. McCarthy. I think he's good. I bet him to win the Heisman. I think in a different offense, it's a different thing. Yes, Michigan's very vanilla offense, but I think the guy's good. I think he's a gamer. I think he showed that in the big games. He played very well. I know a lot of people are down on him and saying, I can't believe you could pick him. That I'm not saying he's going to be great. I'm not saying he's even going to be good. But I liked him last year, and I like him coming out. And I think maybe if he gets in the right spot, he could have a good career. And you know what? He's a hell of a lot better than Justin Fields and some of these other bums that we've taken really high in these drafts. And I just won't get it. And he's way better than Kenny Pickett. So if Kenny Pickett's a first rounder, then he sure as hell is. And his team actually won stuff. Kenny Pickett's putting up stats in a garbage pit. J.J. McCarthy, it wasn't about stats for him. It was about winning. And he did. He took his team to the playoffs 2 years, won a national championship. So I like him. I know a lot of people don't. All right, let's go to Kentucky Derby. As we talked about, 2 weeks away from this Saturday. Should be awesome. But you have a couple of horses in here that are going to be pretty short price favorites. You have Fierceness for Todd Pletcher, Mike Rapoli, and you have Sierra Leone for Chad Brown. Both these horses coming in on the North American Trail. We had our last Derby prep last week at the Bluegrass. The only thing I'll say about this is Todd Pletcher's had loaded Derby arsenals several times. He's had 3, 4, 5 horses in. You know, he wins them sometimes, but he doesn't always win them. And, you know, Fierceness is good. I think he's a good horse. I think Sierra Leone's really good. Chad Brown, not the greatest dirt trainer, but he has had some success on the Triple Crown path. He had Cloud Computing a few years ago, and Preakness was an awesome one for me, just among a few others. But I don't trust him on the dirt. And, you know, getting in there with 20 horses, getting banged around a little bit, that concerns me. So I'm going to be on a horse, and I'm pretty certain, and again, I'm not giving anything official out here, but I will say Forever Young, who's a Japanese import, I said it last year, I've said it for the last couple of years. Last year I was actually on Dermasotagake, and I still believe if he gets a little bit better ride and he has a North American jockey, I think he might have been able to win. But he ran well in the Breeders' Cup and some of the other big stakes races later in the year in North America, so I was very pleased to see that, which tells me that these Japanese horses are getting very close. They are going to win this race at some point. They're getting extremely competitive on dirt, more than competitive. They're winning races, huge races across the world. This horse, Forever Young, exceptional in UAE a few weeks ago, or, you know, back in March, just he was outstanding. So you cannot discredit these Japanese horses. This horse can run. So I'm a little concerned about who his jockey will be. I want it to be a North American guy. They've not went that route, or at the very least, bring in an Oisin Murphy or Frankie Dettori or somebody who's ridden in the States, because Dermasotagake started a run so late in the race he had no chance. So, you know, it compromised him quite a bit. But I think you want to take a look at that, and I'm going to be all over Forever Young here. He's going to be in a lot of my bets. He's going to be around 10-1, and I think he's going to have a really good shot. Couple other ones, Catching Freedom for Brad Cox, Resilience for Bill Mott. Resilience is interesting to me. He's around 20-1. Bill Mott spots his horses very cautiously. These are very lightly run. He does not run his two-year-olds at a very high level, like high clip. So if you remember Country House a few years ago, which I was fortunate enough to have, he was almost 80-1 when he went off. Morning line, I think, was like 65. But Bill Mott's a guy that, you know, even if this horse isn't ready for the Derby, he will be ready for probably the Belmont if he's got the progeny to be able to run that kind of a distance. So keep an eye on that. But Resilience could be one to worth looking at. Stronghold at 20-1 fulfilled the motto. I think he's going to be okay. Dornich for Danny Gargan, I don't mind him. And then there's a horse called Deterministic for Christophe Clement. It's going to be around 50-1, and Clement's another one. Very, very, very slow developer of his horses, and usually they're coming on late. And if he's spotting this horse in some of the prep races, this horse had enough points to get in. I'm assuming he'll run. I haven't heard anything to the contrary, but he's going to be one worth looking at, because if you remember... I'm totally drawing a blank on the horse that I was thinking of. Oh no, I can't believe I'm forgetting this. The horse that beat Tonalist. Jeez, Tonalist. He beat California Chrome in the Belmont. I was all over Tonalist that day. A huge day at the track for me and my friend Kevin. We were all over Tonalist. We were the only people in the entire Ocean Downs cheering as Tonalist won the race, hit the pick 4 and 5 for us. We had him singled, and it was awesome. So that was a Christophe Clement. He won the Peter Pan, and he was ready to roll. So I'm hoping this horse could be one of those. So there's a couple horses to keep an eye on. I'll give far more official picks here in the coming days as we get closer. Can always follow us, BLS_PRP. Don't miss that. ECHL playoffs start on Friday. So tonight, if you're listening, Nailers will be at the Indy Fuel Got the series price. We got Indy Fuel minus 160, Nailers plus 130. So should be a good series. Nailers have picked it up a little bit against Indy. Taylor Gauthier is going to be back. Justin Adamo, of course, is back. Dylan Hamlick's back. They got some of their key pieces back. So I like the Nailers in the series. I think this goes at least six games and seven. I don't see why the Nailers can't win it. They're a slight dog, of course. Indy has had their number most of the season, but they've played a lot of those games without some of their top guys. So with Taylor Gauthier back, if he still remains sharp, hasn't played a lot of hockey, though, so that's a little bit of a concern. We'll see how sharp he is on Friday, so you'll want to tune in or get on Flow TV and check that out and follow the Nailers on Friday night as they'll play in Indy Friday and Saturday, then back home here in Wheeling on Monday and Tuesday before a that's right, Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, and then off, I think, until Saturday, which it's 2-3-2. So three games stay here in Wheeling, which actually they're going to play the third game in Wheeling if necessary, which I would imagine it will be. We'll be at the Lemieux Complex up in Cranberry as they have the Monster Trucks in town here at West Banco. So kind of unfortunate in a really big Game 5. So I wish the Nailers all the best. Thanks to them for their partnership, nailing it down. You can tune into that every single Friday right here with us in the Pine Room on the Watchdog. All right, so let's switch over now to let me touch on UFL briefly. Now we're now 6-6 overs and unders here. We started out, it was really, really high amount of unders coming in, but last week, guess what? 4-0 to the over. So the over is coming back to it. We'll keep an eye on it. Still not sure who's good and who isn't. Champions League going into extra time. Well, Erling Haaland coming off for Manchester City, 1-1 there, and I think 4-4 in aggregate. This has been a clash of the titans. I'm pulling for Real Madrid. We have some future bets on that we gave out here on the program a little while ago. So hopefully keep tuned to that and see how that one turns out. Aussie rules this week. Nothing much on Thursday. Friday, the early game on Friday. Probably Essendon a little bit there. I'm not sure. Essendon takes on the Adelaide Crows. Crows coming off a huge win over Carlton. That was the one we had last week. They're 24-point dog. They won the game outright. Bombers won the last six in the series, like the over a little bit in this game. So, but won't matter. You have already missed that one, but you can follow it on BLS_PRP. So if you're into these things or you're starting to watch these things in the morning when you wake up, check our stuff out on Wednesday and Thursday, and we'll have them on the Twitter page for you. Port Adelaide, the Power, and Collingwood. Collingwood, the defending champs. They're 2-3 on the season. Haven't got off to a great start, but are playing a little bit better. They're off a bye week this week. Port Adelaide, they are playing pretty well, 4-1. But they're, they're a tad bit soft. I have them to win the regular season. I don't hate the bet, but in this case, I think they could be in a little bit of trouble. The favorite has won the last 12 in the series, and Collingwood right now is -3.5 at home, total 166.5. So I'm going to lean Collingwood in the game. I don't love that, but I'm going to play the game over. I think this should be an outstanding game. Collingwood probably going to be too tough at home. Port not as tough on the road as they are at home. GWS taking on Carlton. Carlton 4-1, GWS undefeated. They're 8-4 to the over in their last 12, so I'll be going with the over here. I like that game over at all before I found that stat. Carlton has said 4-1. They're off a bad loss last week. They were upset by Adelaide, who we just spoke about. So I think Carlton bounces back here and puts it on GWS. GWS very lucky to have beaten St. Kilda last week. Very fortunate to have won the game at all. Carlton -3.5 in the game, so I'm going to go with Carlton minus the points and over 175.5. That is an early, early Saturday morning game, so 2:35 a.m. on that one. Brisbane and Geelong, this is probably the game of the week to me. 5:30 a.m. start on Saturday morning. Geelong comes in 5-0, Brisbane 2-3. Brisbane crushed Melbourne last week, so they took down the Demons. They're playing pretty well. Brisbane 8-2 at home, although they have lost twice at home this year, which is stunning. In the last 10 at the Gabba, they're 8-2. Geelong hasn't played well at the Gabba. That's the home stadium there in Brisbane. I lean Brisbane a tad in this game, but they're off of a really big win, so I'm not going to play that. Geelong, they get Tom Hawkins back. They get Patrick Dangerfield back. To me, they're better than Brisbane. So I, I'm Brisbane laying the points here, though. So probably take Geelong plus the points, plus the 10.5, and then under 168.5. I think it's a very tightly contested game. Both pretty good teams. Fremantle and West Coast. This also Saturday morning. Fremantle comes in 3-2. West Coast. How about West Coast? The win last week hammered Richmond, who we told you Richmond was going to be terrible this year. We also told you West Coast would be bad. But West Coast showed me a little bit more than Richmond has. West Coast, those guys are playing hard, and they're getting a little bit better. This is a big rivalry game, so you got to worry about that. I think this is a low-scoring affair. Under 167.5 is my best bet of the week. I also like Fremantle minus the 33.5. West Coast is going to be so pumped that they finally won a game, and they're not going to get, you know, shut out. Fremantle's got great defense, and they've lost two in a row. I really like them here. Rivalry game's tricky to lay 33, but under's the main play. Fremantle the next play. So lay it with the Dockers in under 167.5. Saturday night, also a pretty good game here. Gold Coast in Sydney. The Swans come in off a bye, 4-1 on the season. Gold Coast 3-2 on the year. 2-2, they split the last four in the series, so it's pretty close. But I'm going to go with Sydney here. I think they're just slightly better in minus 21.5 at home. I think I'll take them. And I like the over in this game. Sydney, the top scoring team last year, they can score points. Gold Coast has been a little bit better on offense this year. They were awful last year. They struggled to break 65 some games. But they're better this year. I think they score some points, and I think this game goes over 172.5. And then the finale showdown here, 2 a.m. on Sunday. Hawthorne 0-5 against North Melbourne 0-5. Hawthorne has won the last four in the series. But I tell you, North Melbourne has impressed me a little bit too. They've been able to score. They've been competitive. To me, Hawthorne and Richmond are by far the two worst teams in the league. I know people would disagree with that. But West Coast, obviously awful too. But they show a little more spirit to me. And I think North Melbourne in this game will play very tight. And I think this is going to be a game that they think they can win. They saw West Coast win last week. These teams both winless. And I like the under 174.5 in the matchup and a slight lean to North Melbourne catching 16.5, 17 if you can find it at home. So I think that's a good spot to start. And I think they have a shot of hanging in the match. So that'll conclude Aussie Rules for the week. Again, check out all those picks, BLS_PRP. All right, going to take a break here on Bettors Last Stand. Thanks again to all of our sponsors, IC Cab, of course, 304-232-1313, or download the IC Cab app today. IC Cab, always working. Zambito Flooring America, we have it all. Four Seasons Simulated Golf and Bar. Definitely want to check that out. We're going to have the podcast on next week, I believe. I think this week's one, or maybe the one you watched yesterday, is going to be from what we did up there with Ricky. So, shout out to him. It was awesome stuff, and we greatly appreciate everything he did for us. And, you know, it's exciting to be on board with the Nailers and Jill's Gentleman's Club and Gumby's and, of course, our Watchdog friends and Generations and Figuretti. See, we can't forget about. They've done just wonderful things for us. For Lunch Madness, we'll be at Monroe Central this coming Thursday, which I guess will be yesterday. They'll be out there awarding Monroe Central the Lunch Madness Championship in the TV and PlayStation 5 and all that cool stuff. So we're going to take a break here. Bettors Last Dance Show, 83 from the Pine Room Studio, and I will be back in a moment with Sam the Man talking some racing, some hockey, some baseball, and a little NBA. It is Bettors Last Dance 83. We'll be back in a moment.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Bettors Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. Bettors Last Stand, show number 83. Sam the Man joins us. We were talking before we started recording about the Buccos. Sam, before we get to the racing, let's talk about this mess. So they pulled Jared Jones last night, 59 pitches. He was never in a mess. He was mowing them down. They're only winning the game 1-0, and it wasn't like they were up 6-0. I don't understand it on so many levels. What about you?
Matt, I almost don't have the words to describe how you even make that decision. It's not like they saw arm fatigue. They didn't see him, like, do any of this. Well, there's nothing, man. It was just like, hey, you're going to throw 60 pitches today. And it's funny. It's like I said to somebody at work when we were talking about this, hey, because, you know, we're making gun barrels. I said, hey, I only need you to make 60 gun barrels today. Once you make 60, stop. We're done.
It's like, yeah, you don't want to wear them out, right?
Right, right. It's so stupid. And if I'm Paul Skeens, dude, keep me in Indianapolis. Seriously.
Yeah, keep me in barely pitching. He's barely pitching down there. What's right, that about?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. O'Neill Cruz cannot hit. Henry Davis, he cannot hit. I mean, like we were saying before.
Brian threw his back out.
Again, of course he did. We are back to Bucco baseball.
I thought they were in trouble during the Phillies series.
Oh, yeah.
And well, I was one series too early because I knew it was coming where they were going to just have a series where they scored like a combined 4 runs or something. And here we go. I mean, they wouldn't even threaten. And the Mets are not very good. The Mets actually got to the Pirates. That the one of the strengths of the team was considered the bullpen. And now we're taking starters out at 59 pitches to turn it over to the bullpen. And then they're coming apart because the Mets are scoring all these runs late in the game.
It's embarrassing. And I texted Jarrett that first series. I said, we cannot leave New York 11-8. Goddamn.
Sure enough.
Goddamn, we left New York 11-8.
So back home now for the Red Sox, who have had good pitching and can't score either. So should be a good matchup over the weekend.
Yeah, I have a very, very, very bad feeling. I mean, I just don't even know what it is. They have no offense at all.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, we didn't even think Shelton probably should be back this year, but they're so cheap and they'll just keep the guy. But I mean, I don't think firing him is going to really do anything right now or whatever, but like he shouldn't be back again. Like they're just not going to go anywhere with that guy.
No, and I think the Pirates are averaging almost an error a game defensively.
Yeah.
And if you want to be a winning team, you can't do that.
No. Them and the Red Sox are going to be a great battle because the Red Sox defense is an absolute joke. They throw the ball around worse than any team I've seen so far this year. How about Connor Joe the other night?
I mean, Matt, two nights in a row, I swear to God. I went to bed with leads, 1-0 lead and a 3-0 lead. Yeah. I woke up and I said, what the fuck?
Well,
what is this?
At least you didn't stay up and watch it.
I know, but it's like, honestly, when the ball gets hit to like O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds, I almost turn away. Right. I don't know if O'Neill Cruz is going to field it. He takes a sweet ass time throwing it.
I know.
Did you see that ball Brian Reynolds slid after yesterday?
Yes. Yes. I was like, you got to be kidding me, because I had it on one of my smaller TVs at the time, and I was like, what the hell just happened here?
They kept showing the replay like, oh, maybe it hit off his glove. No, it didn't.
Total whiff job there. Yeah, you're right. Other than hitting the ball to third base when Key Bryant's playing, you really don't know what's going to happen out there.
No, we're back, baby. I love it.
Right, here we go. Maybe Kutch can come in and play some defense in the outfield.
Put him back in center field.
He can't even move. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it didn't take long. Last year's run was a little bit longer. We got to 20-8. Things were looking up for a few weeks. And
yes, they were.
Lasted about 10 days, and now it's back to just scraping, scratching, and clawing, trying to pull out a win each night. All right, let's shift over. The Open Wheel Boys are back. We got F1 action. We got IndyCar action. And, of course, we got Talladega. So let's start with the Open Wheels. Starting F1. We're back to China. We haven't been there since the Wuhan virus decimated all the people of the world or whatever you believe happened there. Right. Yeah, so the virus formerly known as COVID-19, they haven't been back to China since then. 2019 was the last one. And I was looking through these results. Lewis Hamilton won the race and led 56 laps.
Dude, this is one of the weirdest stat things to look up because it's like, man, he was on fire. Fire in 2019.
He was Max. He was Max.
Yeah.
And Valtteri Bottas, who was also running extremely well then, both Mercedes. Mercedes was dominant there. And then you had Sebastian Vettel, who's actually considering a comeback, I saw.
I know.
He ought to replace Lance Stroll.
Dude, I read something today on my lunch break that they want to give Stroll a contract extension.
That's going nowhere fast. That's terrible. Max did run in the race. He finished fourth. He was just coming into his own there. But, yeah, things have changed a little bit. Sergio Perez finished eighth in the race. I honestly barely remember this Chinese track. It's 5.45 kilometers. But yeah, I don't know a whole lot about it. Max opens a minus 525 on the betting line right now. I guess it's Red Bull or bust here, Sam. What do you think?
Yeah, I say Red Bull or bust. I think Ferrari can run well just based off of, I guess, what they did in 2019 and what they did last race. But like everybody else, honestly, the only things I really have written down, I wrote George would be strong. I hope Yuki can get another top 10 because he seems to maybe have found another gear.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Ricardo, he won this race, I think, in maybe 2018, 2017. Yeah, I might be wrong.
Yep.
So yep. I have maybe him in the top 10, but honestly, I think he kind of stinks.
Yeah, no, I was expecting a decent season out of him, and it has not been the case. I've been disappointed in him. But yeah, Yuki Tsunoda, I think he'll be he'll obviously be motivated being still in Asia. And, you know, how about Zhou Guanyu? Can he win one for the home team?
Yeah, you know, I saw that on F1, like on their app, they had a picture of, I think it was Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, and then they had Zhou Guanyu right in the middle of them. I thought, damn, that stinks.
I'm just happy Zhou's still alive after that one accident he was in a couple years ago.
That one was great where he slid.
He hit the wall and he almost went into the people.
Yeah.
Like, I was terrifying looking.
That was first lap.
Yeah, you're right. He didn't even make all that millions upon millions of dollars invested in, and you almost kill people in the first lap.
Right.
That was scary. So, yeah, no, I don't have a whole lot of advice for anybody out there trying to bet on this race. I really don't. I mean, obviously, Red Bull double podium probably is worth a look. I guess we'll see how they qualify and see if we have any follow-up notes. But I don't know if the McLarens did not show very well here. I mean, things have changed a ton, so you really can't, you know, base it on that. But, yeah, I guess we'll just have a wait-and-see approach on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree, man.
Let's
Shanghai, baby.
Yeah, Shanghai, here we come. Yeah. We're back in Shanghai after Wuhan virus. All right, so back to the Indy cars. Almost forget who drives for what teams now because of it's been so long since we actually talked about an Indy car race that meant anything. We go to the Grand Prix of Long Beach. Kyle Kirkwood won this last year. Obviously, a lot of the odds will depend on how these guys qualify. Roman Grosjean ran well. Marcus Ericsson, who is probably going to be my top pick. And Colton Herta, who's had some really good track history here. He's won here. He was fourth here last time. Anybody stick out to you early on heading into Long Beach?
I had heard as he stuck out. He's ran very well. Alex Palou. And then I threw Marcus Ericsson in there because he's driving for Andretti. Like, he's got a fresh start. This was a little tough because, like, Marcus Armstrong, I think he can run well for Ganassi as, like, a top 10.
Right.
But Jack Harvey ran well here, but he's not. I don't think he's racing for the same team. I think he's racing for, A.J. Foyt. So I don't know what kind of car they bring to the table. Like, they've had one race. This is so hard to pick because I have, like, almost nothing to base it off of other than a race about a month ago. Well, more than a month ago.
You don't. Joseph Newgarden's run some solid races here. He's won here in the past. He won the opener in St. Pete. So maybe he's worth a look, too, if you get him at a decent price. But I agree. I think Ericsson, he's going to be my top pick. I like Herta. I think he'll run well. Palou, you cannot go wrong with him. And then, you know, Kyle Kirkwood, I'm curious to see how he'll follow up. He led 53 laps here last year, so that's pretty strong.
That is strong.
Newgarden led 27, and Newgarden was the top performer in the last race, if you can even remember that. I feel like it was Christmas time when they ran.
Dude, I have no recollection of that race. I have no recollection.
It's sad, but it will be cool to see the IndyCar guys back out on the track. All right, so let's talk about Kyle Larson's going to run in the 500 again. We were joking around yesterday about how he has about as many hours behind the wheel of an Indy car as these drivers do currently.
He may have more. He may have more with the testing he did, honestly. Because
his practices is, yeah, he's probably has had more. But, yeah, so what do you expect there from him? Obviously, really talented race car driver. I'm curious to see if they put a good car under him, if he can contend.
I honestly, Matt, I have just this weird feeling that he's going to show up and just outdrive a lot of these guys. Like, I really think he has it in him, because if Kurt Busch can do it and finish sixth, and Alonso ran well too, and I know the open wheel's pretty similar, but something about Kyle Larson, man, all that shit he went through, Hendrick brought him back. They obviously brought him back for a reason, and it's been proven ever since they re-signed him. I just think he's going to go in there and really, really show how good of a driver he is.
I agree. I think if his equipment holds up and he qualifies even decently, I think he'll be a really, really good top 10 car and maybe even contend for a victory, which would be really awesome. And the biggest challenge for him that day will be able to drive all those miles, maybe 1,100 miles worth of racing.
Dude, that is such a feat, man. That is tough.
Who was Kurt Busch, Tony Stewart, obviously. He contended in both races a few times, so which was pretty cool. So keep an eye out for Larson. And talking about Kyle Larson, now let's move over to the NASCAR guys. It was a really interesting race at Texas last week. There were some failures in the race with the tires, which were absolutely embarrassing. But it ended up working out all right for me. And I got to give you the total assist on this one, because I was thinking about a live bet on Chase Elliott, and I was liking the way he was looking early in the race. And then you said, I really like the way Chase looks. And I was like, all right, I'm going with it. And here he comes. He had a strong car. I thought we were going to get we were going to be a little short again. We've had that happen a few times this year. I thought we were in trouble, but we get the caution because of another disintegrated tire.
Huge.
And it works out in our favor for once. And then our guy Keselowski, who you and I tipped to win the race, runs second. So pretty good week for us.
Hey, we need to give a huge shout out to Brad. I mean, we had no hope before the green flag. He was in 32nd when I texted you that we're fucked. I love Elliott. I love Byron.
Yep.
And Brad came, man. He was there in the end.
He ran great. And I mean, just like it was the most unnoticeable ride ever. Like he just pops up at the final restart. Like here he is. Like what the hell?
They just kept showing him. They were like, Brad, he starts in 20th. Now he's in 30th. Now he's in 32nd. I was like, quit updating me on this. These are terrible updates. And then all of a sudden, dude, there he is.
There he is. Incredible. So Keselowski, strong run. William Byron, really, really strong again. Tyler Reddick had a great car. Denny Hamlin, I don't feel sorry for the Hamlin bettors because you got a lucky win a couple weeks ago. Yeah. This time it went against you. But, again, these tires, Sam, we got to do something about these. Goodyear is fucking this up too often now. Or these tires, these guys don't even have a chance. They're just unknowingly blowing out on these guys, just falling apart. What do you think the problem is?
I don't know if they just like, honestly, I don't know if just the whole compound is wrong, or it's going to end up a point where somebody's going to make some serious money betting on an underdog because somebody's tire is going to blow in like a McDowell or something crazy, like a LaJoy, or somebody could really win a race because it's getting to the point where everybody's tire, seriously, it could be this week. Everybody's tire is just, you never know what's
going
to happen to it.
Yeah. And you're just looking at it like the way it was going down, like these guys weren't even. They were under no duress, like guys who were just cruising along out there, not really even competing for spots. And here we go, poof, blows up into the wall. Just, guys were taking hits that probably, you know, Texas is known for, they have some tough corners and the wall hits there can be pretty bad. And, you know, it's one thing if something breaks on your car or whatever, but these tires just, some of them shortly after a pit stop too.
It's shocking that the biggest issue with the next-gen car is the tire. It's been the lug nut. They don't stay on. Right. Now it's the compound. It's like, how can you not fix the thing that carries the vehicle?
Right, and lug nut, back to Kyle Larson, he had a contending car, and the lug nut doesn't go on, and he loses a wheel, and that's the end of him. Now, he battled back to have a respectable finish. You're just not going to be able to recover from that. Let's talk about some guys who had good showings. Last week, Daniel Suarez, Chase Briscoe, a couple of our guys that were under the radar we thought would run pretty well. Fifth and sixth place finishes for them. Kyle Busch, this guy in the top 10? What the hell happened?
Dude, he was right there with Brad. Because when I texted you, you had texted me Busch also. And I was like, man, they're right there. And those two, I don't know if they figured it out or what happened, but it was great to see him up there. I needed it.
Yeah, no, it is good to see. And ironically, Kyle Busch is the defending champion of our race this week, the Geico 500 at Talladega. Talladega is just a track that, it's second to Daytona as far as like, it's one of those tracks you hold your breath a lot of the race. Obviously, the drivers probably do too, but it also presents a unique opportunity for bettors. We don't have the really, really low price short favorites this week. We have guys that can win, and you mentioned a couple of them before, and I'm curious to get your opinion on some other long shots here. Kyle Busch comes in 16-1, Hamlin 10-1, Keselowski 11-1, obviously Brad, huge contender, he's won six times. Ryan Blaney, outstanding record here, three wins. Chase Elliott's won twice here. Does Chase keep it going? It's hard to win back-to-back weeks on this circuit. There's so many good drivers. William Byron around 12-1. Denny Hamlin's had great success here as well. Who's your go-to guy? Are you going to go with any of the big dogs, or are you going to go with an under-the-radar guy as your top choice?
My top choice, it's somebody that's been letting me down for a while, and his number's not that great, but there's something about Joey Logano in this race.
All right.
I don't know what it is. I feel like he's been slowly getting better.
Yep. No, I agree.
The Fords need something, man, because Blaney's been the only Ford that, no, I mean, RFK too, but really that's been sticking out to me that they need something. But, like, I see this Kyle Larson number, and that sticks out to me. He's plus 2,000 at what I'm looking right here.
Yeah.
On Bet Rivers. Is. Like, that's something I wouldn't shy away from that. No, Ty Gibbs is plus 2,200. Okay. And I know Larson's not the greatest speedway racer, but just for how consistent he's been, I don't know if he took the next step, because he's obviously carrying Hendrick right now, and they're on fire. Any Hendrick car, honestly, if you put some money on it, not a bad bet.
No, I agree. I mean, I would say Chase Elliott, he's the kind of guy that can get streaky. So, I mean, he's going to be a contender here. I think he'll run well. Can he get the racing luck at the end, stay out of the crash? I don't know.
I know. When does the crash happen?
Right. And honestly, last time, I think, I don't remember if it was the October race or the, I'm trying to think, one of these races had barely any cautions in it. I might have been the fall race. Because I kept waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. There was only like one or two accidents. It was very minimal compared to some of the other ones that we've seen at Talladega and Daytona in the past. William Byron, obviously you mentioned the Hendrick guys. Alex Bowman can run well on the super speedways. William Byron has run well here. You're right. If you bet a Chevy and you bet a Hendrick Chevy, you're probably going to have a good shot of coming home with a couple top fives and I mean, geez, maybe they even sweep the board or a win. I went a little bit off the beaten path here. I didn't want to take a guys down in the 10, 11 to 1 range at a super speedway because, as well as I do, you can get collected so easily. Yep. So I'd rather have a guy who, if he could escape, gives me some value. So I went with Ross Chastain as my top pick here. What do you think about his chances?
I absolutely love it. And his teammate, Daniel Suarez, is my sleeper.
Okay.
He is my sleeper to win this race at 3,500. I mean, I love that. He was strong last week.
Yes,
he ran well here.
I
and
like
he's already
it.
Got the win under his belt, so he's got nothing to lose.
Exactly. He can take gambles that a lot of guys can't. We hit on these guys all the time. I miss Eric Almirola in this situation.
I know.
He's always my plate racer. I went back and was looking at his stats again, and man, he is so fucking solid at these plate tracks.
So good.
Talladega.
So good.
He's just a great passer. He's always in the mix, so I miss him a lot in this race. Ryan Preece is a guy that I've relied on quite a bit. He's 60 to 1. I'll be taking a shot with him. Yep. Corey LaJoie, you mentioned in the last part, but when we were switching over from the open wheels, I mean, there's no reason he can't contend. He was running really well at Daytona. And I tell you, a guy who I almost picked to win this race is Todd Gilliland. I've been so impressed with the way he's run. And this guy's going to have a chance to win this.
Yeah. You know what? I was putting Todd Gilliland in the same category. And my mind is like Harrison Burton. He's there. He rides around.
Yeah.
Something this year. I mean, last year he had a couple good runs, but this year I have seen his name almost every week. I love it. And somebody else, Matt, that I love is Carson Hocevar. I don't know why. He has been the quietest racer in the field, but he has been so consistent.
Yeah, I know. Another good run for him last week. I've been impressed with him too. You're right. He doesn't get noticed a whole lot. You're not out there saying like, oh wow, he's doing this or that. But yeah, he's been off to a great start this year, and I see him drastically improving to where he's going to be, a top 15 car every single week. I think he is definitely a guy to keep an eye on. Todd Gilliland to me has proven the thing that when you kind of know that the guy's kind of made it a little bit is when he's being able to actively pass some of the really good guys.
Yep.
And he's been up there contending for the lead with Denny Hamlin and William Byron. Like, and that to me. In the past, you'd say, okay, Todd Gilliland, once they catch him, they're going right by him. It's not going to be a thing. Well, that didn't happen so far this year, and I'm curious to see if he can stay out of the big wreck. He's 50 to 1. I think he's worth rolling dice. Always talk about Austin Cindric. He's not nearly as good at Talladega as he is at Daytona, which is really strange because he has been really good on the super speedways, but his numbers at Talladega, not great. He's around 30 to 1. I wouldn't hate that bet. And then Justin Haley, another guy who's had some super speedway success.
Yeah, and honestly, even Legacy Motorsports, Eric Jones, he is a speedway guy. You don't hear much about him, but when the speedways come around, you always see the 43 somewhere.
What do you think about RFK's chances? Buescher hasn't, you know, Buescher got going late in the last year, so he was kind of not under the radar at this point, even last season. Then he really, we talked about it before, the last 10 races of the year, other than William Byron, he might have been the best driver.
Yeah, agreed.
What do you think their chances are? Obviously, they work really well in tandem.
I think that Brad has a better chance than Buescher because Brad's been consistent. And then last week, when we were doubting them, him coming from 32nd to second, I don't know. That just proves to me your veteran, your prowess, your pit crew, your crew chief, all that plays into factor. I think that Brad would be the better of the two, but I could see them working up there together. But like we've been saying, Matt, when is the crash? Who does it take out?
Yeah, who does it take out? I'll tell you a guy who's, again, we talk about his inconsistencies every week is Chris Bell. What are your thoughts on the other? Basically, I ask you this. The other, obviously, take Ty Gibbs out. He's still young. He's still coming along. And we both believe he'll win a race this year.
Yeah.
Denny Hamlin, obviously, ultimate champion, contender every single week. But Martin Truex has had some good cars running. So far this year, he's had a few good runs. But the last guy in the Joe Gibbs Racing garage, and he's actually won a race this year, but Chris Bell, to me, is the most inconsistent of all of them. What is his deal?
I don't know. He just, like you said, he has a week where he has a great run. He's up in the top 10. He's always contending. He's fighting. Then he's just gone. He's absolutely gone. You don't see the 20 anywhere in the top 15.
Yeah, I don't know what
to make. He's definitely the weak link, I'd say.
Yeah, and it's hard to say that because he's got talent and he wins.
I know.
But like
big sponsors too.
So yeah, he just out of nowhere. Like he just, to me, he seems like the Alex Bowman of their team. But but again, I don't know. He wins more than Bowman, so maybe that's not fair. But yeah, I don't know. How about let's see, is there anybody else? Oh, how about, I'll tell you another guy that's intriguing to me, and his numbers are great at Talladega, and he's really run well. And I think a top 10 bet on him and even throw a little bit on him to win is Ricky Stenhouse.
Love it. I love it. He's always around. I don't think that there's a serious possibility. Like the crash happens, dude. He won Talladega or Daytona, whatever that was.
Yeah, Daytona.
Because of a
yeah.
crash. It's like, it's all possible. You got to stick around, and Ricky can stick around, man. Because typically those crashes happen in the front packs because they're making moves. In the back, they're kind of, you know, holding off where Ricky and like Jones and those guys typically are. So I love it. You got a couple dollars sprinkling on Ricky.
Now, what about Bubba? Obviously, he's run solid here in the past. He got his win here, if you even want to call it that. There's like two drops of rain on the windshield. And shut it down, but yeah, Bubba wins.
Ridiculous.
Still not gotten over that one, but yeah. So, I mean, I'm assuming he'll be a contender.
I do too, but like we say, every week he gets the lead or gets in the top five, and he just fucking sees red. He just sees red, and they lose it, man.
Yeah, like last week, he was up there all of a sudden, and then poof, gone. See ya. All the way to the back. All right. It should be a good one. I mean, enjoy Talladega. Obviously, should be an exciting day of racing action. Well, what's not exciting? The Penguins. Tonight's game meaningless, but you had to know this was coming. They cheated death for so long. Getting the loser points in games or giving the other team a loser point that ended up costing them. Detroit didn't end up making it anyway, but the Capitals do. Final thoughts on the Penguins' pretty much miserable season until the last couple of weeks.
Final thoughts would be I would keep Sullivan. I don't even know what other coaches are out there, but like Jari, he has to go.
Gotta go.
They need to tell Carlson you have to play like you did the second to last game of the year, or you're going to go too, because it took you 80 games to figure out that you need to shoot the puck way more. That's embarrassing. Right. They should start Jari tonight. Just fuck it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just I don't know, man. Buried. It's just like Crosby. It's a wasted, another wasted Crosby season. Total waste.
It was. It's two in a row. And you don't have many more of those left. And the guy's still performing pretty well. But yeah, I mean, I imagine they'll keep Sullivan. Our biggest complaint, you and I both have been saying, and we said it before last year, they should not have brought Jari back. It was a huge mistake. The team doesn't trust him. You can find another goaltender to, you know, split time with Ned. You don't need him. So I think they know that now, and I think they'll look to move him, probably move Riley Smith and some of these other deadbeats. I did think that some of the younger guys they brought into the lineup later in the season give them a little spark. So maybe some guys that can take spots next year. But they got to cut with – they got to get, obviously, Carter. Thank God. We don't have to see that ever again.
I know.
But yeah, Riley Smith, Raquel, I mean, they just ran their course here. They just got to go. POJ's played a little better down the stretch the last few games. So,
And I don't think that the Bunting trade is nearly as bad as they were making it seem, but I'd much rather have Jake Guentzel, to be honest.
No question about it. But I will say Bunting kind of helped Malkin get going a little. So I mean, that's the trade-off. I mean, I guess if you look at it, like, Sid doesn't need it. I mean, Brian Rust played great down the stretch. It's just, they're just not good enough, though, to really do anything. Washington did a better job of the quick rebuild. They kept, like, most of their core guys, but they also got a little bit younger and fresher. They did that at the end of last year. The Penguins chose not to do that, and I think that's what cost them. Looking ahead at some of the series that are set in the East right now, do you have anybody that sticks out to you? Florida against Tampa. The Rangers will play the Capitals, Boston in Toronto, and Carolina and the Islanders. I'm assuming Carolina will probably take care of business in that one. Anybody stick out? Do you think there's any underdog that may be able to surprise in those series?
Honestly, I don't really have one that stands out. I think it's one of those things that whatever your gut instinct says, I actually do think that's what's going to happen. I don't think anything's going to stick out of the ordinary.
You're right. I agree with that. Because my gut right now is telling me, and I was on Florida for so long, but man, I just think Tampa's outplayed them. Yep. And they've played the better hockey in the last 3 weeks. So I think Tampa's live to be able to upset Florida at +145 in that series. I think the Rangers will get a little bit better of a series against Washington. Washington's been playing games that have been like playoff games for them now. They shut out the Bruins and Flyers back-to-back nights.
Crazy.
I mean, so I'm thinking Washington steals a couple games from them, at least makes that series go long. Boston-Toronto, which one of those teams could you have faith in? Boston had the all-time great season last year and fell on their face, and then Toronto loses every year. So I would slightly lean Boston there.
Matt, I was even going to text you when I said if he has 70 goals and they don't make it to the cup finals, it's a waste. If they do not make it to the cup finals, it's a waste. I don't even know why I was thinking, like, 69 goals compared to 70. What's the difference? You have to be in the cup finals.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And wouldn't you say, like, if you have Toronto with Matthews and McDavid in Edmonton with 100 assists, and obviously, you know, how good he is as a scorer too. I feel like both of those teams, like, you got to at least make it to the conference finals, and even that's not good enough.
Yeah, I agree. And it actually makes Nathan MacKinnon become even more of a superstar in my eyes, because he has a season like he had with good players around him, and he still put up great numbers. Like, watch out for them.
No, and I think they're totally live in the West if they get the goaltending. The goaltending's been their biggest problem.
So iffy. So
can they catch fire? Same thing with Vegas, who's, barely got enough life in them to be able to win enough games to get into the playoffs. So now they're in a spot where they're going to be very dangerous. They got to play Edmonton in the first round, which looks like that's what will be the matchup. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to play them if I was Edmonton. And then I think Nashville's very dangerous. I think they have good goaltending. They got some good leaders on, Josi's really good. Forsberg's been awesome. So I think they're dangerous for a team like Vancouver, who doesn't have a whole lot of playoff experience, although I am a big Rick Tocchet fan. I hope he continues to be. He's one of the top coaches in the league, if you ask me. But it's hard to simulate that experience. But I'm looking forward to these playoffs. I think it should be very good. I think there's series out there that are going to be really, really closely contested. And I don't think there'll be a whole lot of blowouts. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I do love Tocchet as well. That's somebody that if there was one coach I wish we could have snagged, it would have been Rick Tocchet. I mean, hell were we thinking?
It is almost like when he went to TNT, it was like I was hoping. I like Sullivan. I think he's an awesome coach. I just worry about his message getting – and these fucking veterans, they just don't listen to him anymore. And I do think he's a great, great coach. So I was thinking, like, well, maybe they're just like bump him aside and they got to get rid of him and before Tocchet gets hired again when he was at TNT. Of course, it never happened, but – a man can dream, but I think at some point you may see Rick Tocchet back with the Penguins. I think Mike Sullivan starts the season, but I think you got to have a sit down if you're dubious with him and say, all right, Mike, you have a great, great game plan, great philosophy, but we've got to be able to get more out of these veterans. We got to change a few things just to make, get a little bit of a jolt into the club again. Cause it's just, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but you got four like lockdown Hall of Famers on your team right now, and you didn't even get in the playoffs. You had to win. You had to get points in like 11 of 12 games to be able to even have a chance.
I know. I know.
It's tough. All right, let's go to, before we go, NBA.
Wait, I have one question. Yeah, we didn't address one thing. Our LA Kings, do they have any shot against the Dallas Stars?
Well, I tell you what, I said that earlier on when I was going through the series before you came on. I do think that. I think that if I was Dallas, I would not have wanted to have the Kings first. I would have rather played pretty much anyone else. I would have rather played Vegas, I can tell you that, because they're not nearly as buttoned up. The Kings will give Dallas problems because they got great center icemen, and that's so big in the playoffs. They can control their matchups and their experience. Kopitar's an incredible leader.
Yep.
I like Dallas as a team, but I worry about their secondary scoring, and I think the Kings, I think that's a tough matchup for them.
Dude, I agree 100%. It's like you almost forget that the LA Kings were on some serious cup runs and some serious playoff runs, and they still have some of those players, man.
Yeah.
Like they need.
They're kind of the Western Conference version of the Penguins in a way, because obviously, Kopitar's nowhere near Crosby, but he is a really good two-way player.
Right.
And a wonderful leader, and then you know, obviously have Doughty, but yeah, I think that's going to be a good series. I think it'll be better than what people would expect.
I agree.
NBA wise, what did you think of? Did you watch any of those playing games last night?
No, not really. I was watching the Pirates, and I was tired, and I went to bed.
Yeah, well, that you didn't miss much. It's just hard. Like I was looking at the game tonight, the Hawks and the Bulls. Like really, both those teams are even. The fact that either one of those teams is even a playoff team at all is disturbing to me. The Hawks set the record. There hasn't been a team worse against the spread since 1990 in the NBA, and they made the playoffs.
Dude, it's like you can be a very shitty team. I mean, you're 36-46 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Matt, and that's a joke.
It is. It's pathetic. And then how about the Warriors? I mean, are they going to continue to keep those guys together? Klay Thompson's finished. Draymond Green's an idiot. Like, they need to revamp. Like, you can't just run this over and over and over again. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. It's like, you could even, I hate to say it, you could get rid of somebody like Curry. They never would.
Right.
Because he is the money. He is the draw.
Yeah, he sells the tickets, right?
Right. But it's like, you realistically could, because he's done everything he can do for them. I never thought that the Warriors would have had a fucking dynasty with these guys.
No. No, never would have thought it.
And these things come to an end, man. They come to an end.
And they actually started that thing before they even got Durant, so that's it's saying a lot. But yeah, I mean, when the guys' bodies are starting to break down, it's the end of the end. Any shot the Lakers can contend with the Nuggets? Probably not, huh?
Probably not. I think the Nuggets are the team to beat. I think Boston is just frauds. I love Coach Mazzulla, but every year they seem to be a regular season team.
Yep.
I think realistically a team I love, Matt, is the Magic.
I'm a huge fan of them. I really like their team. I mean, I don't know what they're going to be able to do, now, but down the road, I do like them.
I think they're
on the right track. But you got to like to see some of those teams, the Magic, and obviously the Pacers have had a really good year and have been getting better. So what about Cavs or Knicks? Think either one of them can do anything?
I think the Knicks maybe have a better chance because they don't have the aircraft carrier. They're significantly better without the aircraft carrier.
Yeah, and Thibodeau is an outstanding coach, no doubt about that.
Dude, we were the two lunatics talking about Coach Thibs at like 5:30 in the morning the other week.
Yeah, what a life we live. But
I love it. I love it.
Stuff. Sam, thanks as always for joining us today. Appreciate all the insight. Enjoy the racing. It's awesome. Have three races back this weekend.
I know.
And you get some playoffs coming around now for hockey and basketball. And then, of course, the Buckeyes.
It's a great life we're living, Matt.
Awesome. All right, we'll see you next week, buddy. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Go Bucks.
All right. For St. Clair, checking in. Great analysis on all things sports here on Bettors Last Stand Show number 83. That'll do it for us today. Again, thanks to all of our sponsors. We appreciate everything that IC Cab, Figuretti's, Generations, Jill's Gentleman's Club, Gumby's, Zambito Flooring America, Four Seasons Simulated Golf and Bar, just a wonderful group. Appreciate the Nailers, everything they've done for us, and of course our watchdog friends who have made us feel incredibly welcome. And we love doing the radio show every single Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. So be sure and tune in to the radio show. If you got any questions, comments, observations, give us a call, drop us an email. messages on Twitter, whatever you want to do to get a hold of us here, Better's Last Stand, or any of the Pine Room Studios stuff. Check us out on YouTube and everywhere you get your podcasts at the Pine Room Studios. You can also get the pineroomstudios.com and check out our new website there. Thanks to our boy Timo for taking care of us on that front. Good stuff. And don't forget about the Beer Mile on May the 4th. So May the 4th be with you on Kentucky Derby Day. And we will see you next week here on Better's Last Stand for show number 84. Playoff basketball and hockey are in the air. Got racing heating up. Got MLB in full swing. Won't be long. NFL draft next week. Ooh, lots going on here. April, an underrated sports month. We will see you next week here. BLS out for the day.